I could, yeah, I guess I could, but you know, I could say that, but to be honest, they'd probably be out of a job, right? They'd be in trouble for doing that. Hey, we want 21st century learning, 21st century schools. And then they'll have PowerPoints with bullet points on how you get there. and it's like,
which of the following is true of approximately 17% of both Canadians and Americans?
Developing the innovator's mindset in education, next with George Karas.
And now, it's time for another Edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep. First name. Bentley.
That's right. Today on the show, we've got Mr. George Karas with us. Mr. Karas is the Division Principal of Innovative Teaching and Learning with Parkland School Division, Innovative Learning. Teaching and leadership consultant, as well as the author of the book, The Innovator's Mindset. He has a passion to empower all learners in school and to unleash talent in others. Welcome to the show, George.
Hey, thanks for the welcome, guys. Appreciate being here.
Great. Why don't you get us started by giving us a little synopsis of your book. What is it all about? Why would teachers want to read your book? Or maybe they don't.
We're starting with a tough question.
Well, the book's really focusing on the notion of innovation in education, what it actually means. And I think a lot of times when we talk about innovation, people just replace the word technology and think, you know, if you tweet, you're innovative and things like that. So it's kind of really thinking about, like, what innovation is, what does it mean, what does it look like, and actually how do we go about, you know, creating the conditions where innovation is more likely to happen in schools, but also where we do it ourselves. And I think what I really tried to do with the book, to be honest with you, was I really tried to write it with stories that connected in an emotional way to the content. Because I think a lot of education books, I find them very, like, they're giving you great ideas, but they're not necessarily compelling. Like, you don't necessarily feel you have to do this. And I think that's something that I'm really passionate about. And years ago when I started my blog with the help of so many people that, you know, encouraged me to get going, the focus was stories of leading and learning. And so I really try to do that. So to be honest, I talk about my family in it. I talk about, you know, modern culture. Like, I have, like, a Carly Rae Jepsen art reference. I think I have, like, a Ricky Bobby reference in there, and you know, just things that actually, you know, people see in their everyday lives, but then really trying to make the, you know, the argument on how these things and how these trends or these things that we're seeing are really important to education and how you know, how we can embrace them. So, you know, try to make like a story type, you know, like a nonfiction book that's, you know, really trying to have a compelling message as opposed to just ideas. But I think there's a lot of really practical ideas in there as well.
Hey, George, so if you're working with a set of teachers, maybe doing a train or something like that, how is it that you move them to think that they could be innovative in their classrooms if they feel like they need to follow a set of curriculum and standards and things like that? I know a lot of people feel handcuffed by those things. So how do you move them forward in that mindset?
Well, I think that's really one of the things I talk about is that, you know, as a former school principal and, you know, I'm on a sabbatical this year from my school district. One of the things that we really try to focus on is being innovative within the constraints of what you actually have to do. So the curriculum, the content that you have to do, if I can't say to a teacher, don't teach content, don't teach the content that is listed in the curriculum guide, because to be honest,
I could,
but you know, I could say that, but to be honest, they'd probably be out of a job, right? They'd be in trouble for doing that. And so it is kind of saying, like, the art of how you teach it is not really determined. That's up to you. And so it's, how do you teach this in a way that's compelling, that, you know, goes beyond the skills that the content or the curriculum is saying, right? Like, And so I think that's a really big focus, is really, because we always say, oh, you need to be, you know, think outside of the box. But the reality is we all work with inside of a box. And as much as people talk about, you know, we need to rip down schools and start from scratch, it's not happening anytime soon. So how do we actually create something, you know, within the guidelines of what we're supposed to do that is pushing the boundaries of thinking, that is more than just simply teaching the curriculum, it's going beyond that. I think that's a really big focus on that. And it really is kind of having learning at the drive, like the drive, like not necessarily learning, but the learner, and starting with what our students need and working backwards from there, as opposed to what we've always known, what we've always done.
I love that. It's the mindset of just being able to work within the box and be creative in the box. So can you mentioned the book has several practical ideas for teachers. Could you give us an example of one of those that maybe is striking a chord with many teachers that you come in contact with?
Well, I try to talk about, like, you know, for example, one idea I talk about is like embracing an open culture, and really, you know, tapping into how easy it is to connect with other people. And like a really simple idea that really would not take much for people to do is that if you tweeted one thing a day in your that you're doing in your classroom, and you shared it to like a school hashtag, you shared it to that once a day, just one tweet a day, but you took a few minutes every day to actually read the tweets that other teachers in your own building are sharing, what would that do for learning and culture? And what I probably wouldn't see if I did that at our school is teachers saying, hey, look at Billy just knocking out of the park on this worksheet. Like that's not what they're going to share. They're going to share what they think is really valuable practice. And the way I look at it is that it really is going to push teachers in that own building, because we talk about global collaboration all the time, which is amazing, which is a fantastic opportunity, but do we actually use these things to promote culture in our own schools? And to, you know, you'll start getting those ideas and say, you know what, I saw this from the grade 5 class, I teach grade 1, that's not going to work the way, you know, they're doing it, but if I took this idea and tweaked it and changed this around, this would be amazing for my grade 1 students. And that's really kind of that notion of the innovator's mindset. It's what do you know and what do you do with what you know? How are you actually creating something different? And that's like an idea that's really kind of stuck out with a lot of people, because it is simple yet powerful. And I think that's what we're trying to do. It doesn't mean you have to, like, you know, do the most complex idea ever. It's mm-hmm. It's how do we utilize these things at our fingertips to really, you know, improve learning for our kids.
I hear you saying, and it coming back up, and be doers, basically, not just like learners, but be doers after you learn, like take action. So how does a principal promote, you know, at every school, creating doers rather than just kind of followers, I guess?
I think, you know, leadership is so crucial to this, because you have a lot of administrators, you know, all over the world that basically, you know, they'll say, hey, we want 21st century learning, 21st century schools. And then they'll have PowerPoints with bullet points on how you get there. and it's like,
wait, oh, that's wrong?
Yeah, exactly. But they'll have the things. And I'm not against the idea of presentations. I'm not. If you're like I present all the time, and the way I do it is different from what a lot of people that I see, because I try to make it interactive, you know, using simple things like a hashtag or whatever. But I think that we often say one thing and show another. Mm-hmm. And I think what is really important is that how do principals model that they're willing to do these things and try different things? Like, here's a really simple example that drives me crazy. You have a school moving to Google Apps, and the principal says, we want you to use Google Apps. Here's just a simple Word document that you can, you know, follow along the instructions. Like, why don't you just send them a Google Doc? Like, why don't you actually use what you're saying to use? And it's just little modeling things like that, that you're willing to try to do these things. Like, one of the things that I really noticed is that you have educators going to ed camps, and, oh my God, this is the best learning ever. This is so amazing. Oh, I love it. It just really pushed my thinking. They go back to their schools, and rarely do they actually have kids lead ed camps. And if it was such an amazing learning experience for the student, why are we not recreating it for the teacher? Why are we not recreating it for the kids? And then you see, like, the other thing, oh, makerspaces, how they're so awesome for kids. Yeah, we don't really do them as teachers. And so it's like it's kind of like we separate, like, this is good for them and this is good for us, but it's not really focusing on the learning, like the power of that experience for learning. And I think, you know, as administrators, as principals, I think it's really crucial to not only, you know, have a vision of what could be, but also show that in your actions and show that in your process. And I think that's one thing that I really try to do. I don't talk about anything that I don't do myself. And I think that's really an important concept.
George, I'm gonna bring my brother. If you go back to February 2013 episode of the Deadly Brothers,
yeah,
he talks about doing ed camp with kids.
Yeah, and it's nice because there are more and more people doing that, right? Like, and I think that'd be a great learning opportunity. And the schools that I've seen do it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So what do we do with a campus where you talk about sharing innovative ideas or just something that's outside the box, slightly at least, with your colleagues on your campus? What do we do on a campus where the teachers are real resistant to get on Twitter? Is there another method that you've seen being used by teachers to share out those practices and collaborate? I mean, do they post it on the whiteboard in the staff room, or what have you seen that's working out there?
How would they actually share?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, at my site, I'm not getting people on Twitter. I've tried, but I mean, I can only push so hard. I'm not going to do that to them.
One of the things that I did and this did not lead to every single teacher signing up for Twitter and seeing the value and how amazing it was, right? People are at different times. And I think it's really interesting because you can have me who started Twitter in like 2000, I think 9 or so, and didn't really use it for a year. And then getting on it for like, you know, in 2010, using it for about 6 months. Why is everyone not on this, right? And then you see someone in 2013 saying, oh my God, like, this is amazing. Why are my teachers? I'm like, well, where were you 3 years ago, right? And people are like thinking like, George, why didn't you start when it came out, right? And it's like people find these things at different points. And I think like one thing I always say is that every one of us on Twitter started with 0 followers. We started not knowing what we were doing. And I think that's something that's really important to like empathize with this group. But I think it's just kind of maybe sharing information that you have. Like one simple thing that I used to do was instead of having like my weekly like informational thing that I would send to my staff, I moved it to a blog. And so I would just be very cognizant and I would say, so on Twitter, here's a tweet that I saw with a really great article. Here's another one from this person. And so it kind of was like, you're getting a lot of really great stuff from Twitter, right? Like, and so you kind of would model that, but like even, you know, showing them how it can make their lives easier. One thing that I really focus on is like, say you're a teacher and you teach grade 4 and you have a hashtag for your class. And then, you know, at the end of the month, you're doing that newsletter home and it's like, oh, like what did we even do this month? You know, like it's just so much work and you're sitting there on a Friday because you got nothing better to do on a Friday night than hang out at school and work on this newsletter.
or come on the Bedley Brothers show.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Is that why wouldn't you use a hashtag and document and share like, hey, this is happening in our class now, this is happening in our class now, and then using something like Storify to just pull those tweets in that you've collected. So you're now connecting with parents and community real time, but then using that information that you've created and putting it in something that you've been doing anyway. And I think, again, that's not about the technology because I know teachers are doing that newsletter and they're spending times. And a lot of people, you know, like there's a few teachers that, oh my God, I love the newsletter. I love writing the newsletter, but it's very few from what I've come across. And they kind of like regret it, you know, coming into like January and February, like, oh my God, why did I even start doing this? Right. As opposed to just pulling things in something as simple as Storify. But that's for me is like, how can I show them that it's actually going to save them time and is better? And I think that's a really important thing. Now the investment in the beginning is important. You're going to spend some time doing that, but long-term, can I show them the power of it that it's going to like, go, it's going to really transform something that, you know, maybe is already happening in the classroom that could, you know, become better. And then who knows where it could lead.
I really like, George, that I think your message is to meet, first of all, meet people where they're at. And then show them by inspiring them in some way. And I think that's a cool place because, you know, my brother took 2 years convincing me to get on Twitter. And I said, no one wants to know when I'm like picking up cheese at the market or anything like that. So it is changing their perception by letting them see the quality kind of shares and information that's out there.
Yes, so, I love that idea. Just sharing out, you know, what you found on Twitter. Simple, but genius. I love it.
Well, it is like, it's kind of interesting because what I found was when I shared somebody from the United States who said something I've said 10 million times, it was like, oh my God, did you read that tweet? I'm like, yeah, I did. Remember when I said that? Like now all of a sudden it was the most brilliant idea, but it's kind of like,
sorry about that, George.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the idea that, that sometimes it's a reaffirmation of what you're trying to do, and it's not some crazy George idea. It's like, no, this is actually happening in other places, right? And one of the things that I've really been talking about with people is that in this notion of the innovator's mindset is that somebody in the world is doing the thing that you say you can't do, that somebody's doing it. And I think that's a really important concept. And with the same constraints, sometimes even more constraints, and they're doing these things that are so impossible in your mind for you to do. And I think that's a really impossible thing. And sometimes when we expose these ideas of what other people are doing, it's like, wow, like, and you try to get people to see themselves in that picture as opposed to, oh, well, that school has this, that school has this. It's like, no, they still go through a lot of things that we have to go through, and they're doing it. Right, I think that's a shift in thinking.
Yeah, well, you're pulling their excuses, and so and you're providing the inspiration at the same time. So those people have to really kind of step up and say, oh, okay, I can't use this for an excuse in this. I better do something about it, and it's important for my students now.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I talk about in the notion of innovation is that it has to be new and better, can't simply be change for change sake. And so I talk about innovation being either iteration or invention. So it can be something totally brand new that you never thought about, or actually just tweaking something that exists, but it has to reach those components of being new and better. Can't just be new, right? I think that's something that's really important to identify.
Totally makes sense. Hey, you mentioned that your book has several stories in there. I think we all like a good story. You want to share just one of the stories from your book briefly for us?
Well, I actually really start off talking about my parents, to be honest with you, and they're immigrants from Greece, and talking about my dad, how he came over to Canada, and you know, coming out of a war in Greece, only having a grade 2 education, not being able to read and write any language, not being able to speak English and French. Or, you know, when he comes over to Canada. My mom's actually hovering around here right now, so she's visiting, and so she's really interested in that. And so I talked about that idea and what was really, if you think about this, my dad starts off as like a dishwasher, becomes a salad chef, and then he owns a restaurant, my mom, for like 30 plus years. And what he saw was change is an opportunity to do something amazing. And he embraced those obstacles. And then we freak out because we're going to move from Word to Google Docs. And that's the worst thing that's ever happened to anybody. And you think about how ridiculous that is compared to, you know, what our families did. And it's like it was that thinking to actually create those things. And I think that, like, when you start thinking about what other people did and what we complain about, it's ridiculous that, you know, I remember my mom getting mad because, you know, we're making long-distance phone calls. And she couldn't call Greece that often because of how expensive it was. Now we can just FaceTime people. And, you know, it's just like it's an amazing thing to actually see, right? I think that's pretty powerful.
That's an amazing perspective that you don't get unless you've lived through things or you take the time to listen to people's story and really digest them and understand how strong they were to face some of the things they faced. That's cool, George. Thanks for sharing that.
All right, so it's the time of the show now. We're going to switch gears, if you don't mind. George, you're one of the most edu-famous Canadian educators of our time. So we thought we'd see how educated you are on Canada. We're going to play a little game that we're calling Oh No, Canada. Tell our audience who George will be playing for today.
George Kuros, you'll be competing for Kelly Holden, a fourth grade teacher in Canada. No, she's not.
Just, yeah, look, I don't know if I trust the people asking the questions.
You can tell us if we're wrong. We'll probably be wrong. Or blame Google, one of the two. She teaches at Millgrove School in Spruce Trove. And if you are able to answer two out of the three questions correctly, that's just a 66%, George, then Kelly will be awarded a free download of a ridiculously popular edgy rock band, Rockin' the Standard.
I'm a fiction made of story. And what makes me whole are three main story parts. I'm a fiction made of story. Characters, setting, and the plot. Characters that act and talk, sitting where and when.
So, are you ready? Are you ready for some Canadian questions here for you today?
Yeah, a lot of pressure, and I'm playing for Kelly, so...
We're going to put the word about
for all
in
of
the
Canada,
questions.
George. You're playing for all of Canada.
Good to know. Good to know.
Okay, no pressure, though. Here goes question number one. We Americans hate our taxes. Perhaps you've heard of the Boston Tea Party. So we have a lot of write-offs in the United States. Canadians have their write-offs as well. Which of these is an allowable tax write-off in Canada for personal use? Obviously, you can write off anything for business use, right? So for personal use, which one of these is an allowable Canadian write-off? Is it A?
Skydiving lessons.
Or is it, no Googling, hey, watch it there. Okay. Or is it B?
Lawn fertilizer.
Or is it C?
Dog food.
So believe it or not, one of those is a tax write-off in Canada.
You may save some money after this too, Joe, if you're not sure.
I hope it's dog food.
Is it skydiving lessons, lawn fertilizer, or dog food?
It's lawn fertilizer. It's got to be lawn fertilizer.
Lawn fertilizer. Oh, lawn fertilizer is not correct.
What is it?
I'm sorry. It is dog food.
Are you kidding me?
Do you have a dog?
I have two.
Well, so you can write off your dog food. Now you know. Aren't you glad you came on today's show?
I am. Forget about Kelly. You just saved me a bunch of money.
Yeah, in taxes. I hear the taxes are all under there, too. All right.
I just typed in dog food into Google, and it just popped up tax deductible in Canada.
Are you serious? Yes.
They're listening to us. That's why. Google's listening, always.
Yeah, always. All right, well, you have two more chances, and you're going to have to get them both right in order to be a winner. So here we go.
Okay.
So question number two. Canada and the U.S. have a lot of differences, but we also have many similarities. Which of the following is true of approximately 17% of both Canadians and Americans? Which one is true of 17% of both Canadians and Americans?
So you know that's not a really high percentage. So it's
right. But it is the same in both places.
Okay, all right.
So it's rather unpopular in both places. Is it A?
70% of Canadians and Americans are smokers.
Or is it B?
17% of Canadians and Americans have had cosmetic plastic surgery.
Or is it C?
17% of Canadians and Americans live into their late 80s.
I'm going to A, smokers.
You're going with A?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is correct.
Actually because it is unpopular. So 70%, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yes, death is also unpopular as well.
Okay, well, you got one right, and we're down to the final, third and final questions.
These are typical Canada questions, by the way. Like, what's the, you know, like, I thought you were going to just ask maple syrup things.
Yeah. What's the most famous beer in Canada?
How do you pronounce about correctly?
Okay. How did they come up with the spelling of Canada? C-A-N-A-D-A.
Here we go with question number three. I'm sure you've heard about this. Vancouver is, of course, famous for its annual bathtub race.
You must have heard of this.
No, I have no idea.
You haven't been in the bathtub race?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a crazy competition that started as Nanaimo's centennial event in 1967. The first year, so it's been going on since a long time.
Before you were born.
Since before you were born, Jordan. The first year, close to 200 tubbers raced a 36-mile course in converted bathtubs, and only 48 finished. Today, toward the end of each July, the high-performance bathtubs cover the 90-minute course the last weekend of July as part of the weekend-long Nanaimo Marine Festival.
Wow, this is really a good question.
This is really obscure.
So now that you know that, here's your question. What new addition has been made to the bathtub race festivities?
I'm just wondering if you Googled Canadian facts and then went to, like, the 50th page on Google.
This is like the 3,000th page. Yes, rare fact. Okay. Actually, yes. I've been training for the bathtub race. That's why I know about it. So we're looking for the new addition to the bathtub race festivities. Is it A?
The event now includes a bathtub parade.
Okay.
Or is it B?
The event now includes a bathtub decorating contest.
Or is it C?
The event now includes a bathtub demolition derby.
So your three choices are the event that now includes a bathtub parade, or is it a bathtub decorating contest, or it is a bathtub demolition derby?
You're totally cheating. I would have said A anyway. So it is A.
You want to say A?
I was actually going to stop it right then and say there's obviously a parade. There's obviously a bathtub.
Canadians love their parades or what?
No. But no.
It's too cold for parades.
They love their bathtubs, Tim.
You got a bathtub race. You got to celebrate it, I guess, somehow.
All right. Well, Scott, how did George do today?
George, you got 2 out of 3 correct, and that's good enough to be a winner. Congratulations. You won absolutely nothing. Kelly at Millgrove School in Canada has just won a free download of Rockin' the Standards album, educational rock and roll music for 2nd through 6th grades.
Oh, great job, Mr. Kuros. And awesome. Why don't you let your new fans, let them know how they can get a hold of you, get your book, website, any kind of contact information that you'd like to share so people can follow up on this.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. It's G Kuros, G-C-O-U-R-O-S. My blog is georgekuros.ca.
As in California or Canada?
No. georgekuros.ca. And you can get the book on Amazon, so it's being sold there. And what's nice is actually on the blog, you'll see a tab. It's called The Innovator's Mindset. And it's actually basically a living study guide for the book for people doing like book studies and things like that. So I add links. I've added all the links from the books that I discussed, but also any new content that actually kind of, you know, furthers that learning, I'll add too. So that's why I call it a living guide, is because I'm still adding things that are not in the book that kind of support some of the thinking.
Very cool. Awesome. Hey, George, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate the time.
My pleasure.
You want to tell us about what's happening the first Wednesday of February?
Yeah, every year, first Wednesday of February coming up is Global School Play Day, and you can go to globalschoolplayday.com to get involved. This is just a way to get word out that kids are, they need to play. They need unstructured playtime, and there's a decline of play in the culture of America, Canada, many places around the world. We've got educators signing up from all over the world. We had a couple of schools today in India sign up. You can go there to connect with other classes and schools that are going to be celebrating unstructured play on the first Wednesday of February. We also have the sign-up sheet coming out real soon to sign up for 2017. Going for 100,000 students this year, maybe a half a million for 2017. What do you think, Scott?
I say yes. Can you imagine if there was like 10 million kids just playing? Like, I think the world would change. I don't know. It would be awesome on one day. And it's really about bringing awareness to play. So, hey, George, thanks again for coming on. And we really appreciate the time. And we hope people go check out your book.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate your time, guys.
All right. Thank you. And thanks for watching.
Mom and Dad, thanks for watching.
So I could be one of those Bedley brothers. Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing.